Hello and welcome everyone to Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. I'm Chip Haley, your host, and we are so happy to have you alongside today. Let's get to it with this week's interview. Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. I'm Chip Haley, your host, and I'm back and better than ever. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being alongside with us today. We've got a great guest that we're going to be interviewing. And so I tell you what, it's good to be back behind the controls again, and I am just so looking forward to doing Who's Who. All right, so let's just dive right into it. Our guest today, and it gives me the greatest pleasure to introduce April Gray. April, welcome to Who's Who.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. So I know it's been a while since we visited, and so it's basically going to allow those that are new in the blind and low vision community of Missouri to get to know you close and up front. So let's kind of begin with your family. I know that Mary Pendleton is your mother. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mary Pendleton's my mom. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And you're married?
Yes, I'm married. Justin's my husband. And he kind of helps get me everywhere I need to go.
Sure. Yeah. And what's his name?
Justin.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, right before we begin the recording today, you mentioned your grandkids. So how many grandkids do you have?
We now have 11. And we spend time with 6 of the 11. So between the two of us, that's how many we have. So
okay.
Yeah, one was just born a little over a week ago.
Yeah.
So, we've had a lot of them staying with us while they were waiting for their new little sister. So she already had 3 boys and so, yeah.
All right.
The youngest one's a girl, and she's going to have 3 older brothers.
Oh, that's awesome. That's all just really beautiful. Yeah. So congratulations. Now, do you get to see the family much? You guys get to hang out together?
I spend the time with a lot of the grandkids. Most of the time I'll have at least one here, if not 2. And we see my husband, one of his kids, and we don't see the other one. And I see one of my boys. And then, of course, I see mom. I only live about 15 minutes from mom, and I talk to her every day. And I don't see my brother and sister a whole lot. They both are busy working. My brother does also have RP, but he hasn't really got in with any of the groups or anything yet. He's just focusing on different studies and stuff that they're having new for RP. You know, to try to come up with a cure. In fact, he just got mom into a study that looks real promising. So we're kind of, mom wasn't going to do any type of studies, but he said, hey, for your grandkids, you know, if there's any chance this could help them, because his eyes weren't quite bad enough to be able to be included in the study. But since mom has no vision, they're like, you're perfect for the study. So
yeah,
even though she's
yeah.
77, and of course I go out and see my dad whenever I can. He's
sure. Yeah. Yeah. And you're all right there in or around Kansas City.
Yes. Just northeast of Kansas City. Most of us live. Now my sister, she still lives, out in Blue Springs, which is, kind of, I guess I see what it would be. It's more southeast, Kansas City area. But the rest of us are all pretty much all here in the Northland area, though one of my older sons, he moved way out down there. He's in Max Creek, Missouri, so he's way down south there, the Ozarks. And but yeah, my other son lives right next to Worlds of Fun, so
yeah,
we're all right here, you know, the Northland of the Kansas City area and all northeast. So
yeah, so let's also kind of go backwards for just a little bit. So did you grow up there in Kansas City, or where were you born and raised?
I actually was raised right here in the house I'm living in. My dad, my grandpa, my great-grandpa laid every brick of this house. And my dad built the rest of it, and the only thing he couldn't do was let pour the basement. Had to get a professional for that. Though he did pour the basement for the garage and the little storm shelter underneath. But yeah, I'm living in the when he him and his wife built a house out in the country with some of her family's land. Then he ended up selling the house to me. So yeah, so I'm back where I started.
Yeah,
Here
okay,
out
all
in
right,
Austin.
yeah.
So, yeah.
And so you went to school there pretty much all your life?
I went to school through the third grade, and then I was homeschooled.
Oh,
And
okay.
yeah, and that's actually where I first met my husband. And we both went, of course, our separate ways. He was older. He graduated with my brother. He's a few years older. And met them during the homeschool graduation when my brother graduated from senior high. And I was ninth grade then. And then years later, I got on Plenty of Fish. And he had asked me, can I add you to Facebook? Well, when I added, he saw that it said Lindenwood Academy. And that's who they, he had went through and recommended. And that's who my mom ended up having us go through for our homeschool. And he said, wait a minute, I graduated with an, I think I graduated with you. And I'm like, well, no, I know I didn't graduate.
Yeah.
But then I realized he told me the year. I'm like, no, that's when my brother graduated.
Yeah.
So when we got together, his mom actually pulled out the old VHS tape of our graduation. And there is me playing Pomp and Circumstance on the piano while all the seniors walked in. So it
Yeah.
was really neat to see that. I'm like, I didn't think anybody would still have an old VHS tape that, you know, that old. From then, so it was pretty neat seeing that. So,
I think that's really awesome. I when I hear kids that have been homeschooled, we Linda and I we homeschooled our boys too, and I think it's just a wonderful thing, a marvelous thing that kids can have the opportunity. Not every child has that opportunity, but
yeah.
those that have the opportunity to be homeschooled, I think it's just terrific. I really do.
Yes, it absolutely is. And I tell you what, there's getting more and more post-COVID. I think it showed parents that even if they're working, they can still homeschool. And so we've had, they said, we actually have a huge homeschool group. When I was growing up, we were like the only people you'd have to travel around to get with other groups. You know, my husband was in Pleasant Hill, and that tells you exactly how. You know, with a graduating class of about 20 to 25 kids, if you had to gather up kids all the way from way north of Kansas City, clear through Pleasant Hill, Missouri, just to get 20 to 25 kids that were homeschoolers. Now we have more than that just in my town.
Isn't that something? Isn't that
Yes. Yeah, so
something? Yeah.
it's post-COVID, there's a lot of people that realize they could actually do it because they were stuck homeschooling their kids. So now we've just, it's really booming and you know,
Yeah.
it's really neat to see.
So after you graduated from home school, did you go to college anywhere, or what did you do after your home school?
I did do a little bit of college. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I'd moved to the city with mom because she'd moved so she could go to Alpha Point, and her and dad ended up getting divorced then. Then I ended up moving back home with my dad, and I ended up joining the fire department then. And got first my first responder, then my EMT, and then eventually my paramedic license. And I spent 4 years on the fire department, three at that time. And then after my kids were born, I quit for a while and then went back to it for another year, and did that after I divorced my first husband. Went back to moved back home again and joined the same fire department here in town. So that's kind of what I did at first. And worked, I've worked in a lot of different fields. I worked in the insurance field quite a bit, everywhere from drawing the blood for insurance policies, you know, doing the physicals for it, to you know, selling insurance policies, to and financial stuff, to working at issuing policies. I worked for a company, so I've done a lot of that too. I've worked with handicap. Worked with handicapped kids. I've done a lot of different stuff, you know, over the years, and you know, try to utilize as many of my skills and learn new things as I went to.
Well, so let me go back again. You mentioned you and Justin and how you kind of met. Let's talk about that for just a few moments. So, kind of share with us how all that took place and when it happened, and then how you guys finally wound up getting married.
Well, it was about 12 years ago, well, a little over 12 years ago now, about 12 and a half years ago. I was just kind of looking around on Plenty of Fish, the app, and I was had what hadn't been in a relationship in quite a few years, and one son was living with his dad, and the other had just was getting ready. He had, I think he had just joined the military and graduated and joined the military. Had lived with his dad, so I ended up was looking on Plenty of Fish, and I was like, had talked to a few different guys, and nothing just clicked. And finally, I was like, God, who do you want for me? And I'd swipe, and I kept always coming back to Justin. So I was like, okay. I contacted him, and we went out on a date. We actually, our very first date was also a double date with his daughter and her boyfriend. And we went to, we all went to the movies together. So that was kind of neat. Saw an old movie. And then we ended up, I think it was after our second date. It was Valentine's Day, so we went to a church banquet where they put on a nice banquet for everybody and had a speak, you know, comedian and everything. And the teens kind of did all the thing to raise money for the teens, the different things that they did. So we went to that, and he ended up proposing right after,
Is
shortly after
that
that.
right?
He did on a walk up on Lover's Lane in Excelsior, and he proposed right after that. So it was pretty whirlwind. By April, the end of April, we were married. So we just knew at that point, we just, you know, I knew he was the one for me when he helped me move. And I had fell down the stairs because we was sleeting that day. And he come and laid hands and prayed for me. And I'm like, that's the one for me.
That's
You
great.
know, so. Yeah, it was. So we've been married for 12 years now. It moved back to, you know, bought the house from my dad. Our first, a little after we'd been married, right after we'd been married for 1 year, we moved into this house and have lived here since. So.
Well, you use the terminology a whirlwind courtship, and my wife and I, we had a whirlwind courtship too. We met in April, married in September, and so, you know, as the old adage goes, the proof of the pudding's in the eating. So my wife and I now have been married, come this September, 51 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
So, sometimes a whirlwind courtship doesn't last, but apparently yours is working. My wife and I, the 51 years, so it tells you something. But
I think it helps when you let God direct you to the person.
that's right. That's right. Amen. That's right. So, what kind of work is Justin doing?
He has not been able to do any work for quite a few years. He broke his back, and shortly after we were together, he had broke his back 5 years before, and he had went through all kinds of stuff. They didn't realize it was broken at the time and just thought he had fallen. Oh, we'll just send you to physical therapy. And they didn't realize it until 5 years later, and they were in a panic. Hey, you got to get in here. We just realized your back is broken. And we're like, hey, it's been like this for 5 years. We'll be in a couple of days when he has his appointment. We're not rushing in today, just because you now just realized it. So it ended up growing back deformed since they were doing physical therapy and everything on it and didn't realize it was broken. There's really nothing they could do surgically because they said the vertebrae needs replaced. And since it's like, I think T7, being in the middle of his back, there's no way they could replace it right now. So he has a lot of pain from that. And then a few years after we were married, we had a tree that was coming down threatening the house, and he had to take a huge branch off it to make it fall the right way. The branch alone that he cut off was over 1,000 pounds. And he was climbing up in the tree with a harness around him. Well, it's the tree split and caught that harness and crushed him against the tree. And he had to use the chainsaw to cut him out of it, to cut the harness. He had to split the harness just so he could get it released, that branch released from him. So he couldn't walk for about a month. And we've tried to get him on disability, but we didn't have insurance then. And by the time we had insurance, everything is old enough that and it's very hard with Medicaid to be able to get MRIs or anything so they can see the damage. And he's times where he'll be able to do stuff around the house. And there's other times where his leg will go completely numb and he has to walk with a cane.
Yeah.
So it can be very difficult, you know, even setting. He never knows what's going to trigger it.
Right.
So it makes it very difficult for him to be able to do anything. So we just kind of struggle along right now and, you know, about the best we can.
Let me ask you, April, do you have much residual vision?
I have lost a lot of vision this last 2 years, especially this year. And it's what I do have. It's like about 3% maybe. And my right eye has a wrinkle in it from I've been getting injections for years. And I did have kind of a tear type wrinkle in my eye. So my right eye, I don't see a whole lot in. My left eye, I can see. I think it's down to about 3%, but it's getting pretty hazy. And that's why I was really hoping to be part of a study, but I have an autoimmune disease and also on immune suppressors, and that cuts me out for any study. So I'm hoping if they do get a drug approved, I'll still be able to do it because I do still get eye injections every month or every 6 weeks, but it kind of keeps the haziness down of what I do have left.
Okay.
But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. What I do see is can be pretty hazy. And so.
So what was the actual cause or result of your blindness?
I do have RP, like mom.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Okay. But you've seemed to adjust pretty well to, you know, your vision loss.
Yeah, I think it's really helped me growing up with having a mom who was visually impaired. You know, because she went in a ditch when I was a baby. Sid quit driving then. So, you know, we would either walk everywhere we needed to go when I was growing up, or she had this giant tricycle that had a motor on it. And she put one of us in the basket in the back and one of us behind the seat, or we'd ride our bikes along beside her and we'd go up and get milk and whatever we needed at the store here in town. And, you know, and she would just tell me if I couldn't find something because our house wasn't finished. She would just, her go-to comment was always, feel like you're a little blind girl. So most of my friends were shocked because I could put on eye makeup and stuff at 14, 15. I didn't even have to use a mirror because I just learned, hey, you know, if there's not anything available, you just pretend you're blind and feel. And so I did that, you know, a lot. And I, you know, and mom was able to, you know, show me the resources and show me that, you know, there's so much stuff out there, you know, adaptive equipment, you know, whether it's just a talking scale, you know, or things that can help you, you know, make your screen larger. There's so many different things available. And she was able to get me to the resources so much earlier than some people can.
And I
think that's what helped me actually get ready. But what really helped me come to terms with my blindness and feel comfortable with it, because for years I just would try to say no, I'm not going to accept this, I'm going to try to do things without a cane or anything. Is when I did Dialogue in the Dark in Kansas City. That I had enough vision that when I went through with the lights on I could see what everything was, but then going through and guiding people in the dark with my cane not only made me you know, feel like I was helping people understand blindness, but it made me understand my blindness and feel comfortable with it. And that was the first time I truly felt comfortable with my cane, was after doing the Dialogue in the Dark and just walking through there so much, completely in the dark. You know, because I was still using all of as much of my vision as possible walking around. Well, when it would get dark and I couldn't see anything, I would go into a complete panic. But then doing Dialogue in the Dark, and I knew the trail to take, knew what was safe. It made me have that confidence.
Sure.
You know, that I never had before that. So that I think was the absolute turning point for me that I no longer feared what was coming.
Yeah. Well, I kind of went through the same process that you did. I refused to be blind. I didn't want to go to the rest of my life being blind, and I was not ready to accept it. I did, however, go to the program for the blind in Kansas City. It was a 6-month program. I went through it in 3 months. And that was only because of my attitude. My attitude was that, I don't care what I learn here. I mean, I'm not ready to use any of it. When I got back home after those 3 months, I put my cane away, I put my Braille writer away, I put it all away. I didn't use any of it, and it was only because of my attitude. But many years later, I went back to the same program for the blind, and my attitude was different. I was ready to accept my blindness and ready to move on with my life. And so when I went back, everything that they wanted to teach me and train me, I was ready for it. I mean, I soaked it all up, man. I loved it all. But mainly, I loved the, well, again, I guess I just loved it all. I don't know that any just one thing that I learned and didn't care anything about the rest of it. No, I wanted to learn it all. April, I even got a big kick out of the self-threading needle. I mean, it's just, I wanted it all. I wanted to learn it all. I thought it was just awesome, man. I tell you. So I went back and I just thought it was really great. So yeah, I'm glad that you were able to make it through the process and you've really well adjusted to your blindness and everything. And listening to moments ago when you were talking about all the things that you have been trained in, man, I tell you, April, you've got some really awesome skills. So, share with us, what are you doing today?
Today I'll probably have to clean up once the grandkids leave. I do
Okay,
do
all
a lot
right.
of cleaning.
Yeah.
So I mean I do some of the cooking. I do have the Highmark stuff. Some things I don't have Highmarked. I go by feel. I know exactly where it is. Yeah, I do still try to mow occasionally with the push mower, with round stuff, the trees and stuff, but my husband, when he was couldn't he couldn't his legs were when he was numb, could not get on the lawnmower for a month. We finally had to get thought we were going to have to get somebody mow for us, and because we were facing a ticket, he's like, "Do you think you can do it?" I said, "Oh no." I said, "I'll draw the line there." I said, "I almost, when I was a teenager, almost ripped the gas line out of the house. I could see the back end." I said, "There is no way." I said, "Push mower, it's electric. It's, I'm only going in front of me, with a tiny little electric push mower." I said, "I am not going over the riding lawnmower. There's no way." I said, "I'd end up in the creek or something." So, so I do know my limitations.
Well, I know the last time you and I visited and I did the interview with you that you were, I think you were working at the fire department at the time. Is that right? Wasn't that what you were
Well,
doing?
no, I was utilizing my skills that I used from the fire department, and I worked as the emergency preparedness
Oh, that's it. That's it. Yeah.
for the other group.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
I'm still doing that right now with the other group. And then of course I'm the president of ATI, which is right now we are independent. We are no longer associated with any other group. We are an independent group, and so I am still the president of that. So that's kind of what's kept me from doing any type of role with BLVCM, because I know that they really want you committed where you're not, in charge of any other groups. So that's kind of been my delay there. I do still love, like I say, emergency preparedness stuff. I love doing some legislative stuff. Any adaptive equipment stuff and technology. I really enjoy doing all those. I do writing also. I do the newsletter for the ATI, and I do write some. I sold one of my books to Pocket FM as a syndicated series. And so I do some writing. I haven't done as much these last 2 years with kind of semi full time having grandkids, usually at least 4 days a week. It started to slow down just a little now that my one that was staying, he's 2.5 now. So I had him from the time he was 2 weeks old, pretty much 60% of the time. So that kind of slowed my writing down some, kept me pretty busy. But now I usually, it's a little less now, anywhere from 2 to 4 days a week.
Yeah.
I have the grandkids.
Right.
And then kind of cleaning up the rest of the time. So I do still keep pretty busy with that, but I haven't been doing near as much of my writing lately. But
Well, I've kind of followed you from afar still after all those years ago, and I kind of kept up with you and what you've been involved in. Which, and I knew that you were still the president of ATI, and I think that's just really awesome. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And then, but I did also want to talk to you, visit with you, because I know that you and your mom both were really heavily involved in legislation, specifically, you know, legislation for the blind, visually impaired. And I wanted to catch up with you and see if you were still involved in that. And it kind of sounds like you are a little bit. Is that something that you still have a passion for, or?
I do to a point. I haven't done lobbying in years. I haven't done it with any other group, but I do always try to keep on top of certain bills. When I go to vote for something, just like all these amendments that were on there,
right.
I spend usually anywhere from 4 hours to an entire, 4 to 8 hours.
Yeah.
4 hours is using the minimum that I actually go through and look up the people who are running, what they stand for. I want to make an informed decision. I used to be one of these eeny, meeny, miny, mo voters. And, that's changed, after, I mean, I don't like to be too political, but after seeing the first, when Donald Trump was impeached the first time and listening to, all of the different hearings and everything, really made me kind of sit down, and I actually will log on to YouTube and listen to hearings. It really is an eye opener, because when people run for stuff, they tell you all kinds of promises and they let you see the face of their campaign. When you actually listen to the hearings and hear when they're questioning the people in the hearings, and you see how they vote, it really makes you say, that person that I've always supported these years, because they've always been in that seat and I just keep voting for them. Because you're like, well, I recognize the name. You're like, they're not the person I thought they were. And it really made me think, hey, I need to do some more research. So rather than doing the eeny, meeny, miny, mo, or hey, I recognize that name, I actually become a informed voter, is what I like to call
it. Yes, yes.
And, I'm almost to the point where I tell people, if you're not going to be an informed voter, don't vote, because you're doing more damage than good. Because I'm like, whether you're Republican or Democrat, look at the person, what they actually stand for. Because you can say, well, these are my views and that's what I think my party stands for. But if your person is not actually going and voting for that way, then you're actually, you might as well be voting the opposite. So that's what's made me with the legislative actually kind of push me more to that. I've seen, like, this time around in Missouri, we've had a lot of people that have proposed stuff to cut the blind pension. They've tried to, they're kind of putting, they tried to cut MARC and different things, and different things are going to help disabled people. And they're wanting money to go to education, the regular schools and stuff, and colleges, which I don't think that any money other than what, like, for low-income people, I don't think money should be going to the colleges. They're a profitable system. They charge enough. Our state money, you shouldn't be taking from disabled services so you can give money to colleges. So those are areas that it's like, you have to know what's truly going on. You can't just say, well, what blind bills are out here? You have to say, what is the whole picture that may affect where they're wanting to put money instead of, what their justification is they're giving all these justifications. If you're not hearing them say, well, hey, we're lacking money here. This is why we want this. So you know what you can fight in your argument you can give. Say, hey, you know, XYZ is why you don't need to be giving money to this one. You shouldn't be taking money from this area. So you have to see the bigger picture. And I think that's the whole area on the legislative, that it's like, it can't just be you're looking at only the blind stuff. You got to see what they're really pushing.
Yeah.
Because some of that stuff they're pushing is going to cost money that then they are going to use those excuses to get in to the blind stuff and to cut areas to blind senior services and different things.
So do you still receive, are you still subscribed to getting the legislative update from the Governor's Council on Disability?
Yes. Okay, I very do good. Get that.
Okay. Very, very good. So what are your thoughts on some of these proposed revisions to the blind pension?
I haven't really looked through in real detail. I knew they took the money from the blind pension, and I don't believe that they should have been able to do that, especially since they had cut money from rehab services. Part of what was supposed to be is they were supposed to be getting that money after we did. So we wouldn't have had all that. If they had been fully funding it like they were supposed to, we would not have had that big of a surplus. And if they were going to cut money to give to a school, it should have went to the School of the Blind, not to regular public schools. Because it had just said it could go to education. I think what most people originally wrote the bill probably assumed that since it was a blind bill, that it was going to go for the education, including rehab services and the School of the Blind. Not public schools. But I think it does hurt us that now, that since they do have that blind kids now can go to any public school, they don't have to go to the School of the Blind. The schools can justify, and the state can also justify giving it to regular schools. And while I know it's great for parents to be able to just send their kid to the local school instead of having to go all the way down to the School of the Blind, I think it also is a detriment because those schools are not capable of handling and helping the kid do everything they need to do. They do not have a full-time person. They have someone that usually covers a huge wide area and may come up to your school once a week or once a month. And the kid is not getting the services, but the funding is still required. And so they're taking money from areas that could really help. So I'm not a proponent of having, you know, the disabled kids at every school. I think there should be the specific services at specific schools. And I know a lot of people do not support that, but I think since we don't have an overabundance of specialized teachers, that's what we need to do. I think that since they didn't make things clear originally in the blind pension, they just said to education, everyone would have read that bill and assumed blind education. So I think that that is a problem. I think they're going to utilize more and more ways now that they know it's there to continue to try to take it from us. So I think we've got to become more educated. Like I say, on not only this, not only on blind pension, we need to be educated on every new big bill that's going to cause funding. That's out there.
That's right. So
we need to know what's going on with everything. That's why I try to go through and glance at a synopsis of every single bill that's proposed. When I'm doing legislative, I don't just look at the, do the keyword search for blind, disabled, etc. I do read a synopsis of every single bill proposed when I'm doing the legislative stuff. Because you never know when something snuck in there. Missouri now has the bill that when our electronic voting machines, when those quit, they do not have to replace them. And I made sure I brought that to the other MCB's attention at the time, and I was told to step down. So they did not feel a concern for that bill. And I'm like, I was very concerned that... we did not have alternative means. Now, I did find out that you can get a Braille ballot. Mom found out that because they asked her when she just went, and they do have Braille ballots. I never knew that before. Of course, that wouldn't help me. I don't have feeling in the tips of my fingers. So Braille's kind of out for me, but
Right.
you know, I'm like, I would rather have my husband or someone I trust help me vote than to use the voting, you know, some of the voting machines if they go
Sure,
out,
sure.
you know, if that's what it is. I seldom use a voting machine. I don't trust them 100%. The what spits out, what goes in the machine is different. So, you know, I'm always kind of questioning, and you know, I just think there's a lot of things we have to look at when it comes to making sure our rights stay, you know, stay there, and you know, aren't compromised.
Could I ask you to, when you come across something on the legislative level that you feel is vital to the blind community, to you're still subscribed to the BLVCM listserv, right?
Yes. Yes.
To share it with us. And I knew that you still kept your finger on the pulse of what's going on.
Yeah.
That was another reason why I wanted to do this interview with you today. Because I know that you pay close attention. You're very watchful of what's going on, and like you just said, you have widened your scope not just to the issues that impact the blind community, but where it raises awareness on other issues that I still think is vital and important. So I'd like to extend the invitation to you. When you come across different pieces of legislation that you think that we need to know as Missouri residents, I would really like for you to share that on the list.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, okay, very, very good.
Yeah, because they're bad about sneaking in little things that you have no clue on. And the keywords don't pick them up, and it might not look like something. Just like I say, that bill that passed, no blind people were willing to take up it because they didn't think it was going to be an issue because of the other legislative that says they always have to have electronic voting available in Missouri. But they no longer have to repair any of the machines. It, once they're obsolete, they break, they no longer replace them in that place. So they could tell you, well, you're going to have to go to whatever your county seat is because we've only got one left in your whole county. So we can't, you know, or you'll have to call ahead to make sure it's at your location. And if we've got two different blind people who've called and requested it, we may have to have you driven to a different location, or you'll have to vote early. You know, at a polling, you know, at the county seat. They could make those requirements because then they're still technically abiding by the state rules. And those are little things that people don't think about. That all it says is there has to be one available. It doesn't say it has to be at your polling place on election day. It says it just has to be available for you to use, if requested. So, you may have to sit there for 3 hours while they go and transport it to you on election day. That's different things that you have to think about. That most people, when they see those different bills, that think, oh, well, that doesn't affect the blind. It could. You know, if they're no longer repairing all the machines that you're used to always being there, whether you utilize them or not, you know they're still sitting there in the corner plugged in, and they're no longer going to replace them once they break. Then what's going, well, then where are they going to get the machine for you to use when you need it? And so that's what we have to, that's why you have to look at the broader picture and, you know.
Well, April, you mentioned quite a bit here this afternoon, all the different kind of things that you're involved in. Been president of ATI, you're a mom, you're a grandma. You're doing all these other kind of things, all the different things that the skills that you've been able to acquire, the trainings, everything. I mean, all of it. And it really goes a long way in helping to identify really who you are. Are there anything else, any other areas that you would like to share with our listeners that would help identify who is April Gray? So can you think of anything else that you'd like to share with us that would help?
You know, that's about it. I mean, that's kind of me in a nutshell. I'm a brutally honest person. Never ask me a question you don't want an answer to. That's what I always tell people because I am brutally honest. I absolutely hate lying. It physically hurts me. So I always tell people, don't ask me a question you don't want the answer to, because I will tell you. So, that is something to know about me. I will always tell people, I try to always be very truthful. I value honesty above all else in
You
my
know,
life.
April, that's what I learned about you early on, that you're
Yes.
straightforward, you're upfront, and as you just mentioned, you're honest, you're truthful, you know. So that's one of the things, however you may or may not like it, at least you
Yep.
know where you stand with April Gray.
Absolutely. Yep. I'm one of these that I'm like, I don't like if you tell me one thing to my face and something behind my back. I'm like, just tell me the truth. I'm one of these that I'm a very forgiving person. So if you offend me, I'm gonna get over it. So anybody that knows me good will tell you, I don't hold grudges. I might if you hurt my kids, but or grandkids especially. But I let things go. I've let my husband, it sometimes aggravates him because I'll forgive people that he's like, they don't deserve forgiveness. They don't deserve you. Yeah, I'm like, you know what? Everybody deserves forgiveness. I do. And but like I say, I forgive because I want people to treat me the same way, and I especially want them to treat me with honesty. So I'm like, I'd rather you offend me telling me the truth to my face than to lie to me, because I find a lie a lot more offensive than I would ever find the truth.
So, was that a characteristic that you were able to develop from your mom's side, your dad's side, or just on your own?
I think just on my own. My brother's one of these that makes jokes and will tell. I always say he can't tell the truth to my son. Unfortunately, one of my sons is the same way. I said he can't tell the truth to save his life. My brother does it more as a joking matter, as kind of a very dry humor. He'll just tell you something outlandish. So I grew up with that. So I valued honesty, straightforwardness, because his outlandishness. My son, on the other hand, his name means peacekeeper, and so he'll tell you names are very important. My other son is means name means defender of men, and he is so much like that. Battle bullies type of thing, where my other son, the peacekeeper, he will tell you whatever he thinks you want to hear to keep the peace.
Yes,
And so he will lie about the most ridiculous things. He's so much like my brother. He'd sit there and it aggravates me so much. Even his wife occasionally be like, I don't know why the heck he's lying about that. So yeah, I just got to where with growing up with my brother and everything, that I just, like I say, it physically hurts me if I lie. So I literally feel like my soul is being torn to pieces if I try to tell a lie. So I have got to where I think that is part of it. So I'm just so, very straightforward and honest. So.
Well, that's really good to know. I mean, so here again, people that get to know you close and up front, one thing that they can take to the bank is April is a woman of her word. She tells you something, by golly, you can take it to the bank.
Absolutely. Yep. Because if
So
I say something and I then say, wait, I don't know, I'd heard that. Let me go look it up. I will look up something. They used to call me the Google Queen, because back then, when all you could do was Google something. If I don't know 100%, I'm going to look it up. But if I'm certain, hey, I've known this all my life, or this is the way I've been told all my life, so I believed it was true. But if I even say, let me go look that up, and before I sit, tell you, no, that can't. That don't make any sense. I've had things that I'm like, no, that definitely can't be. Then I'm like, wait a minute, look it up. Nope, sure enough. So yeah, I'm one that when I try to give someone an answer, I want to make sure it's factual, because I don't want to lie by not knowing the truth. Because to
That's
me,
really
that's
good to
still a
know.
lie. So since I hate lying, it's like, nope, I will do an hour of research just to make sure what I told you is fact. And I'll call back and say, hey, no, I found out I was wrong.
Okay, all right. Well, we don't have a whole lot of time left here, April, but I do have a couple other questions I want to get to. So thank you for sharing that bit with us. So we now understand you, that you are a woman of your word, and you can stand on the word that you share with us. So, but I do have a couple of really quick questions. You eloquently described your surroundings, especially like with your family. Is there ever a time during the day or week or month that you have time to do whatever it is that you want to do? If it's just want to spend time by yourself, go somewhere, do something, just so that maybe you can find some quiet time, or just a time that you can just enjoy whatever it is that you're wanting to do on your own, by yourself, or do you ever have time like that?
Yeah, I do spend a lot of time. I'll listen to my story or watch short dramas on my phone or listen to the political stuff or different things where I'm just relaxing. I do that or just sit outside. I kind of because I have some arthritis in my feet, so I tend to, if I'm going to do cleaning or different things, it's okay, I'm going to do this. Okay, now I've done about an hour's work, I'm stopping. Now I'm going to go relax for another hour. So I kind of have to pace it, especially with fibromyalgia and different things. So I've learned early on, you overdo it, you're not going to be able to do anything for the next couple of days. You're going to feel so horrible. You're in excruciating pain. So I do take the time to just lay back, listen to music, whatever I feel like doing in between. I make me my list of stuff I got to do and say, okay, now I'm going to next on the list.
Oh, good.
Okay, and then it's like, nope, I'm going to relax for a bit until I feel like I got my next burst of energy to go do something. And then, whatever it is on my list, I mean, I'm a big list person, so I don't forget to get stuff done.
Okay, so now in closing, I would like to tap into your wisdom and ask you to share with our listeners any words of encouragement, anything that you feel like that has helped you tremendously, that had a great impact on your life, anything that you would like to share with our listeners, any words of encouragement or whatever it is that you would like to share.
I think the biggest thing is just never give up. I know how frustrating it is as we lose our vision. There are times where I've felt so low, I felt helpless. I felt like I was no good to anybody anymore because I couldn't see. I felt like, there was just nothing I could do for myself. I felt helpless, and I had to stop and say, you know what? What are the things I still can do? And you've got to focus on the positive at times. Don't just say, I no longer can do this. You have to say, what can I do? And what may be able to I could do that could help me be able to still enjoy this. I can't ride my bike anymore. But you know what? If I could rent a two-seater bike, me and my husband could do it. I could still be able to ride a bike that way. So there are things that you can do adaptive. If you don't know, look online, ask someone, get in one of these groups like ATI, get in a group, listen to your tech talk. There are adaptive things. Blind people go skiing, they play baseball. There are so many things you still can do. So, but you will feel helpless at times. There's nothing you can do about that except get past it. Okay. Don't feel bad when you feel overwhelmed and you're feeling helpless, but don't wallow in it. You've got to sit there and say, no, what can I do? I still have things that I can achieve.
Well, I tell you what we're going to do, April. Why don't we let you put in a plug for ATI? When do you meet? What times? What days?
We meet the third Thursday of the month on Zoom. I did set up a Facebook group, Adaptive Technologies Incorporated, and it is out there on Facebook. But yeah, we do have a group that meets the third Thursday, and I put out usually for the members, I do put out a every 3 months put out a quarterly newsletter also. So, yeah.
Okay, very, very, very good. Well, thank you so much, April, for graciously consenting to being my guest here today on Who's Who. I think it's been really marvelous and I've really appreciated it. So thank you so very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
You are actually the first person that I've interviewed, having came back and once again now doing Who's Who. And I tell you, you put in some energy in me and I know our listeners as well, and excitement, and I think that's really a good thing because a lot of us need that energy and excitement, and you help restore that in a lot of us.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, listen, April, you take good care and say hello to your mama for me, will you?
Oh, I will.
All right. Well, listen, take good care now.
Okay,
bye-bye.